there are many supporters of Dr. Ron Paul who really favor his policies toward Israel. I have a former mayor of a city in Israel who has some grave concerns.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is Wednesday here on the Line of Fire. Iowa caucuses take place yesterday. A lot of interesting things going on politically. And the name Ron Paul, Dr. Ron Paul, of course, playing a prominent part in what's happening politically. Now, we don't normally do politically based shows here on the Line of Fire. We bring various perspectives, biblical perspectives, to political issues. There are some things, though, in a sense, that transcend politics. And when we're talking about America's relationship with Israel, when we're talking about the safety of Israel, America, and other nations, these things transcend politics. So we're going to venture into some interesting waters today. I have a special guest live on the line from Israel, David Rubin, who is former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He's a political analyst. He founded and is the president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, which is established after he and his three-year-old son were wounded in a vicious terrorist attack. And he's the author of the book, The Islamic Tsunami. Before I bring David Rubin on the line with me, here's the number to call. In particular, if you agree with Dr. Paul's policies, foreign policies, in particular, his policies towards Israel. So if you're a Ron Paul supporter, I want to give you an opportunity to interact with my guest from Israel, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, our website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. David Rubin is coming from a Jewish perspective. You may be coming from a secular perspective, Jewish perspective, Christian perspective. But we're looking at this basically in terms of policy issues. And let me just tell you how I got to do this show today. I was prompted to write an article about Dr. Paul's followers, and it seemed that they were especially touchy. Is it because they're especially passionate? Is it because he stands for certain causes those don't stand for? Am I being unfair? I wrote the article. It got a torrent of responses. In the midst of it, a number of people who said Dr. Paul is actually a friend of Israel. He said we should be the friend of Israel. We shouldn't dictate borders to them. We should get rid of all foreign aid to the surrounding nations as well as Israel. And so there was a lot of discussion going back and forth. I said, boy, I don't have a dog in this fight. I haven't looked at it this carefully, but some of his statements have me concerned. And in the midst of that, I get a press release from David Rubin in Israel, Ron Paul in Israel, the questions that won't go away. I said, well, let's do a show on this. So, David, thanks for being back on the Line of Fire with us and joining us from Israel. How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. Good to talk to you.
All right. We've just got a minute, and then we'll get into some lengthy discussion. But in a minute, just to bottom line it, living in Israel 20 years, a leader in the nation, do you have concerns about Ron Paul's foreign policy concerning Israel?
Well, yes, certainly I do. As a dual American-Israeli citizen, who's been living in Israel for some 20 years, I've been following the elections very closely, and Ron Paul has a history of some very strong anti-Israel opinions, and this comes from his statements. It comes from his statements both in writing and verbally, and I think that when people say things, we need to listen to what they're saying and to try and understand it and to put it into its proper context.
All right, so here's some of the questions we want to ask David when we come back, and I want to hear you in depth on this. Are there just reports from a disgruntled staff member that's negatively coloring the waters? Are the policies of Dr. Paul going to be dangerous for the United States? How does this affect the American economy? I want to take these questions up with David Rubin and take your calls when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest today from Israel, David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, which is in Samaria, known to most of the world as the West Bank. He's founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. And he comes our way with grave concerns about Ron Paul's foreign policies. David, I read the comments of fellow Eric Dondero, or he has another name he's used just because of different parents. And he claims that Ron Paul's not an anti-Semite, but he wants to see Israel basically off the map. He sides with the Palestinians. Well, it's just one guy. He's a former aide. According to the Paul people, he was fired. Are you basing your concerns about Ron Paul's policies on the rantings of a fired aide of Ron Paul?
Well, first of all, by calling them rantings, we're making a value statement here. This is someone who worked with Ron Paul from 1987 to 2003. It's not like this is someone who just passed through the Paul camp and was quickly fired. This is someone who worked closely with him, and I think that there undoubtedly is some credibility to his statements. But if we took those statements in a vacuum, then it wouldn't be a fair appraisal of the situation, because we need to look at the full picture. Now, let me just point out that you mentioned my book, The Islamic Tsunami. Well, the subtitle of the book is Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And one premise of my book is that President Obama has been the worst president for Israel in American history. Now, he's generally considered to be to represent the far left of the Democratic Party. And unfortunately, Ron Paul has out-Obamed Obama. His foreign policy is to the left of President Obama. And while he may have some sound economic policies, as do some of the other Republican candidates, his foreign policy is way out there in the left of the American political spectrum.
All right. Now, his view, let me quote some of his words sent in by a supporter. As far as Israel, we should be their friend and their trading partner. They are a democracy, and we share many values with them, but we should not be their master. We should not dictate where their borders will be, nor should we have veto power over their foreign policy. So he also says the surrounding Arab nations get seven times as much aid as Israel gets. And also a recent study came out that showed that for every dollar you give to an Arab nation, it prompts Israel to spend $1.4. So perhaps his non-interventionist policy is in Israel's best interest. That's what pro-Paul supporters would say, who would say they're pro-Israel. So living in Israel, why do you reject that approach?
I didn't say that I do reject that approach. I think that, frankly, if all foreign aid was to the Middle East was stopped, including to the Islamic countries, then I wouldn't have a big problem with that. The problem is that the foreign aid doesn't just come from the United States. The foreign aid comes from all of the Islamic countries and the Persian Gulf oil wealth. So that's where the main problems lie. The aid to all of the Islamic terrorist organizations that Congressman Paul doesn't seem to have a problem with. He certainly doesn't seem disturbed by all of these Islamic terrorist organizations. He actually seems more disturbed by candidates like Rick Santorum and Michelle Bachmann, who I just heard has dropped out of the race or suspended her campaign. But Ron Paul seems much more concerned that people like Rick Santorum and Michelle Bachmann may be anti-Muslim or may have a problem with the Islamic ideologues. I think there's a lot more to be concerned about from the Islamic terrorist organizations than there is to be concerned about Israel. But if you listen to Congressman Paul, in his in the writings from his books or from interviews that he's done, he seems much more concerned about Israel's perceived injustices towards the so-called Palestinians. For instance, he referred to in his book, he referred to the influence of the Israeli government on America and the, and I quote, the apartheid conditions that Palestinians are being subjected to.
All right, let me just jump in. And friends, I don't want to be quite as selective in calls. If you have a question, a larger question about Israel's relationship with the United States and security issues, if you take issue with David Rubin's statements about President Obama being the worst president towards Israel in Israel's modern history, or if you are a supporter of Ron Paul, number to call 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I want David Rubin to lay out his position as clearly as possible, and then we'll take calls. We're wide open to do it. And listen, he is a Jew who is a mayor of a city in Samaria in Israel. He doesn't mind some controversial calls or being challenged in his position. But David, the apartheid statement, when Jimmy Carter wrote his book and talked about Israel being an apartheid state, there was rightfully outrage over this, that he could dare say those words. And living in Israel, obviously, you know the situation and even the insult of calling it an apartheid state. But you're saying that Dr. Paul has made reference in writing to the relationship with Israel and Palestinians and referred to it as apartheid? You're saying it's an actual quote from one of his books?
This is from page 317 of his book, Liberty Defined. And this is the exact quote.
All right. Well, is he right? I mean, hey, we hear about the injustices. We hear about atrocities. You know, there was the initial UN report, of course, got modified about Operation Cast Lead, the war in Gaza. And certainly you have to, maybe it is an apartheid state. So enlighten folks, because a lot of people in America just hear what comes through the media and the sensationalism. So let's just focus on that a little bit more. You made reference to the so-called Palestinians, the accusation of it's an apartheid state. From your position there on the ground, what's the reality of Israel's relationship with so-called Palestinians?
Well, the reality is that the leadership of the Arab Muslims who live in the land of Israel, and these are people who refer to themselves as Palestinians. They were never an independent nation of any kind. Newt Gingrich hit it on the head when he called them an invented people. They were never a sovereign, independent nation in the Middle East. Of course, before the State of Israel was reestablished in 1948, the only people who were referred to as Palestinians were Jews. My father-in-law, who was born in the land of Israel, in Jerusalem, in 1939, he was referred to as a Palestinian. It's only after 1967, after the Six-Day War, when Israel recaptured its biblical heartland of Judea and Samaria, Judea being the region south of Jerusalem, Samaria being the region north of Jerusalem, and of course eastern Jerusalem itself, where the Temple Mount and the Western Wall are located. So that's when suddenly this Palestinian people was born, because basically the Arab nations surrounding Israel were not succeeding in destroying Israel, so they had to find a way of doing it, of turning the David into a Goliath. And that's what they did. They created this Palestinian people, and they started complaining about how the Israelis are oppressing the poor Palestinians. Well, who are these Palestinians, if we want to call them such? They are the Hamas terrorist organization and the Fatah terrorist organization, and the Islamic Jihad terrorist organization. Those are the three main political parties, if you will, that make up the Palestinian Authority. And that is who Israel is up against. Now, Do you think that that these terrorist organizations that have been firing rockets on Israel for the past 10 years and have been committing terrorist attacks against innocent civilians on the roads in Israel are the oppressed people under apartheid conditions? Well, I don't think so. I have to disagree with Congressman Paul on that. It's just not, those just aren't the facts. It's either from ignorance or something worse than that.
All right, let me jump in here. We've got a break. I want to get to some calls on the other side of the break. David Rubin, his book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. We'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
In a moment, I want to ask our guest, David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, which is on what's known as the West Bank, otherwise would have been called Samaria. He's giving us his understanding of American political leaders and their relationship to Israel, President Obama, whom he has shared his grave concerns about in the book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. But according to David Rubin, my guest from Israel, Congressman Paul is more extreme in his positions that can be dangerous to Israel than even President Obama. If you'd like to interact, oh, I got flooded by posts from people supporting Ron Paul. Now's your time to call in, 866-34-TRUTH. 866-348-7884. We'll go to the phones in a moment. But, David, a little later in the broadcast, I'd like you to break down your views about the different candidates, the Republican candidates that are still in the race, and where you see them in terms of Israel. But let me just press one point further. Would you agree that although you have the terrorist organizations leading the political organizations among what we know as the Palestinians, that you still have several million people who have needs and that many of them are victims in a political battle or in an Islamic battle against Israel, and that Israel needs to do everything it can at a humanitarian level to help these people? Would you dispute that?
Yes, I would dispute that. I think that these people who identify as Palestinians at this point, they generally have a much higher living standard, and this is by objective appraisals. They have a much higher living standard than do the Arabs who live in most of the surrounding countries of Israel, with the possible exception of Dubai. This living standard is much higher in the areas of the Palestinian Authority, and that's because of Israel. I mean, all of the people who live in the Palestinian Authority areas are dependent on the Israeli economy as long as they are living there. So that's one thing I think needs to be said and needs to be understood. Secondly, it's important to understand that there were elections for the Palestinian Authority back in 2006. These elections were sponsored by the American government, former President G.W. Bush, encouraged these elections as a way to bring freedom to the Palestinians. And so they voted. They had their free elections. And who did they elect? They elected the Hamas as the majority party. In second place came the Fatah. And third place we have Islamic Jihad. So this is who they have selected as their leadership. Do we automatically have to accept it because this is who they elected as their leadership in free elections? Well, I don't think so. I think if you look around the Middle East and you see the so-called Arab Spring and see who is being selected in the elections, we see the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood and the Salafist Party that have won in Egypt the parliamentary elections with some 65 to 70% of the vote. The Muslim Brotherhood has called openly for a globalist jihadist process to destroy and eliminate the Western civilization from within. Does someone like Ron Paul not think that that is a threat to the United States and to Western civilization? I believe that it's a very serious threat that needs to be paid attention to.
All right, so the argument would be, and I want to go to some calls, so I'm just going to throw this out, and then we'll come back to it. The argument would be that the reason the Muslims are upset with us and wanting to kill us is because of all of our interventionist policies around the world. And if you're looking at it from an Islamic perspective, we go into Iraq and fight. Okay, Saddam Hussein is gone, but look at the large numbers of Muslims that were killed in the midst of it, and so on and so forth. So we'll come back to that argument. Let's get to some calls, and I appreciate, David, that you're able to stay on with us for the entire hour. Mary in Jersey City, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I'm not necessarily a Ron Paul supporter, and the bottom line is I probably would not vote for any Republican, because every time we put a Republican in power, they start another war. And right now we're gearing up to start a war with Iran when, you know. But bottom line is I have two basic reasons for why I agree with him on some level. The first is political economics. The people who are pushing for a war with Iran are more concerned with Israel than with the U.S. I mean, Israel's budget seems to be in pretty good shape. We're trillions of dollars in debt. We're just coming out of two wars. We just don't have the financial economic, you know, we're not in a financial economic position to start another war with anyone, let alone with Iran. One of my main reasons also is I think that Israel is misunderstanding the times. I mean, there's an issue with Iran, but the bottom line is Iran is a strong has strong political leadership, and they're a stabilizing force. Regardless of whatever is going on with Iran and Israel, Iran is, bottom line, a stabilizing force in the Middle East. If Iran goes, what's going to happen in the Middle East with all of the Middle Eastern countries is exactly what happened in Egypt and Libya. You know, the Antichrist, you know, they're assuming that we have to build a temple and all of that has to happen before the Antichrist comes.
Just to jump in on the prophetic part of some of those expectations, the two main points would be just America's current debt situation, the economic implications of foreign aid, one, and then two, that you actually believe that Iran is somehow a stabilizing force in that region, and if their government goes down, it's going to get even worse. Listen, David, we've got a break right now, but hold on to those two questions. As soon as we come back, you'll respond. David Rubin is going to stay with us the next half hour. My appreciation to David. We'll give out his website info. But remember his book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And David, could you just tell our listeners your website, please?
Sure. Well, there are two websites. There is the website of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, which is Shiloh, or Shiloh, as Americans would call it, israelchildren.org, shilohisraelchildren.org. And then there is the website about the book, which is islamictsunami.com, islamictsunami.com. And, of course, the book is available on amazon.com and at local bookstores.
All right, so we'll be back. David will respond to these questions. Those that are leaving us now, please continue online with us, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. Please remember, tomorrow I'm in D.C., 12 to 1 Eastern Standard, speaking at the Family Research Council. You can watch that live online by going to FRC.org, clicking events. And if you want to stand with us, sow into the work that we're doing, hold our hands up. Come on, people spending billions of dollars on politics. Put the money where it'll last. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, my guest today from Israel, the former mayor of Shiloh, which is Shiloh in Hebrew, which is in biblically Samaria, but called the West Bank today. He's a political analyst and author of the book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. He contends that, Mr. Obama has been the worst president towards Israel that we've had in the modern history of Israel, but that the policies of Congressman Paul are more extreme and dangerous than those of Mr. Obama. So we're asking for those who differ with him to call in as he can share his perspective, his expert political perspective, and you can share your perspective, however expert or non-expert it is. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. So, David, before the break, Mary from Jersey City had two literate questions. They were not just emotional rantings. She's wondering about America's foreign aid for Israel in the midst of the massive debt that we currently have. And then if we look at Iran as the great enemy and maybe Israel bombs the nuclear reactors there and all-out war in the region, won't that destabilize? Won't that hurt things more than help? Your response, sir.
Okay, well, I think that Mary made some very good points there and asked some very good questions. As I said earlier, I am absolutely not objecting to an American reduction in foreign aid to the entire Middle East. I don't have a problem with that one bit. I understand the situation, the economic situation in the United States, and I am absolutely not one who is asking the United States to attack Iran. Israel has proven in the past its ability to defend itself and to defeat its enemies. And I think that the American administration should just let Israel go forward and do what it needs to do. I'm not asking the Americans to put in a great expense and go to war against Iran. I realize that the two wars that the United States has been in recent years, which unfortunately have dragged on much longer than they probably needed to if they were fought the right way in the first place, then I understand that. I understand that concern. And as far as Iran being a stabilizing force in the Middle East, that, you know, that's almost a comical statement. I mean, do we think that Nazi Germany in pre-World War II Europe was a stabilizing force as Hitler was building his armies and creating his military as the dominant force and was taking over country after country? Do we think that Nazi Germany was a stabilizing force? Well, certainly the Saudi Arabians and the Egyptians and the Jordanians and the Kuwaitis who are quietly urging Israel to attack or urging any other country to attack Iran, they are very concerned about Iran possessing nuclear weapons. And a country that sends heavy economic aid to the Islamic terrorist organizations in the Middle East, that sends heavy economic aid to the Islamic terrorist organizations that send people with bombs strapped to their bodies to go on buses in Israel and around the world to attack innocent civilians in Western countries as well as Israel, do we think that these people can be trusted with nuclear weapons? Well, I clearly think not. And fortunately, there are some Republican candidates who agree with me on this. But Ron Paul seems almost cavalier about this. He doesn't seem concerned in any way about this.
All right, let me jump in. And David, on the other side of the break, we'll hear from some Ron Paul supporters. You're next, friends, with David Rubin from Israel.
Cleansing flame, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
My guest from Israel, David Rubin, author of the book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, all 5-star reviews on Amazon. So go order a copy. Get some copies for your friends, Amazon.com. I think you'll find it eye-opening reading. David, I want to hear from some other Ron Paul supporters, but before I get to their calls, you gave me an actual page number from a book where Congressman Paul made reference to apartheid conditions in Israel with those identified as the Palestinians. Are there other things out of his own mouth, not a newsletter that he disavows, but things that he said in a speech that you heard or in a book that you've read where he's made Israel statements that concern you?
Oh, certainly. He has praised the far left the far left American Jewish organization, J Street, which was developed with the encouragement of the Obama administration. He praised them for challenging APAC's, what he called APAC's monopoly control of the discussion. He's also praised Peace Now, which has been one of the most active far left Israeli non-governmental organizations in trying to get Israel to surrender its biblical heartland. These are the statements that Ron Paul has made, and as well is when Israel finally responded to 10 years of missile attacks on its cities emanating from the Hamas and Islamic Jihad terrorist organizations in Gaza. Israel responded by sending in the Israeli army, and Ron Paul was on the air criticizing Israel vehemently and saying that Israel has created a concentration camp, and that's a quote.
Yeah, I heard that as
well. Concentration camp. I don't think that that the congressman at that point, okay, maybe he wasn't running for president in that particular year, but I don't think that the congressman doesn't choose his words carefully. I think he knew exactly what he was saying, and it's an important analogy to be making, especially since Israel had showed enormous patience and I would say even foolishness waiting so long after having its cities attacked. I don't think that any reasonable country would have waited that long before sending in the army.
Got it. All right, let's take a call from Nathan in Phoenix, Arizona. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I just have a question. So it sounds mostly like you agree with Ron Paul and the policies, except for the nuclear capabilities. And I would agree that Iran having a nuclear weapon could be extremely dangerous, but if you look at it from a biblical perspective, I don't think God would ever allow Israel to be attacked by a nuclear bomb. Even if they, Iran never got one. So.
All right, but Nathan, you agree with Ron Paul's policies on Israel. Do you have a question for Mr. Rubin?
Yes, this is directed at Mr. Rubin. I was listening to his explanation of why he disagrees with Ron Paul, and to me it sounded like he agreed with most of what Ron Paul says, except for saying that we should leave Iran alone.
No, that's absolutely not the case. I don't think I've heard a point of agreement. His only point of agreement was to say that he doesn't want America fighting Israel's wars, and that it's great if America doesn't give money to Israel or the surrounding nations. The problem is that you've got radical Islam pouring money into the surrounding peoples to attack Israel. But what's your specific question, Nathan?
Correct. From the research I've done on Ron Paul, I believe he has the same views. Except he doesn't believe that we should attack a country. He believes we should go after
citizens. All right. Nathan, tell you what. We got a bunch of people on hold. I was trying to get to your question. So see if you can formulate your question, then we'll come back to you. Dwayne in Charlotte, Michigan, your question or rejoinder to David Rubin, please.
Hi, Doctor, and Mayor Rubin. Good to be with you. I think there's a misunderstanding when it comes to Israeli policy. There's a lot of common ground that I think even Israeli people can come to. He doesn't want to hurt the military advantage Israel has, and he said it on record. And he wants to maintain Israeli sovereignty and allow them to do whatever they need to do to protect themselves. He wants to get out of their way. Now, I don't see that as a problem, and as far as the definition of Zionism is concerned, I think that lines up pretty well. I think he misspoke on the concentration camp issue. Mm-hmm. He's not an eloquent speaker like many of us aren't, and he trips over his words. He could have spoken better about that. But I think his intent was to bring about a greater understanding of poor people in Palestine who are kind of caught in between the conflict with Hamas and their baiting of Israel in the war.
I think. All right, so David, what about that then? What about that Ron Paul was primarily concerned about the victims who don't have an alternative other than Hamas or Palestinian Authority or Islamic Jihad, and if somehow America pulled out of it, it would benefit them, if that in fact is what Ron Paul's thinking. Your thoughts?
Well, the Palestinian Authority, those who live in the Palestinian Authority areas, including the Arabs who live within pre-1967 Israel, they have always voted for people and politicians who support terrorist organizations or are members of terrorist organizations themselves or are leaders of terrorist organizations themselves. I think it's very revealing, and it says a lot of more about the Arab Muslims who live in the land of Israel, whether it's in the area that much of the world calls the West Bank, or whether it's in the 1948 to 1967 borders of Israel. I don't think that these are poor victims, and as I said before, their standard of living is clearly much higher than the standard of living in most of the surrounding countries. So it just doesn't make sense when they're referred to as these poor victims. Secondly, I just think it's important to stress that I wish that it was just a slip of the tongue referring to Israel treating the Palestinians as if they're in a concentration camp, or referring to apartheid conditions that they're being subjected to by Israel. But he said it quite a few times. He's written it in his book, and as Ron Paul says very clearly, said very clearly in a recent interview on Fox, that his views have been consistent over 30 years, that he is the most consistent candidate. His views have not changed, whether they're views on domestic policy or views on foreign policy. Here we're talking mainly about foreign policy, and I think that we need to pay attention to the things that he said and the things that he's written.
Got it. All right, Dwayne, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Steve in Elmont, New York, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, how you doing? How is everybody doing? God bless you. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, and to you.
Well, you know, this is my observation of I don't agree with anybody that comes against Israel, because as what I read in the Bible about that God says, he will judge the Jew first and then the Gentile. I see there's a beautiful love when 100,000 Christians over Christmas weekend were praying and worshiping God. I see this love relationship between Israel and the Christians. I don't agree with anybody that comes against Israel or Christians.
Yeah, and Steve, I certainly appreciate that, and those would be the sentiments of the vast majority of folks listening. But is there a specific question regarding Ron Paul's policies and Israel for our guest?
Well, I don't have a question, but I just want to say that I don't support anybody
that it is against Israel. And I thank you very much just for me to say that tonight.
All right. Hey, Steve, thanks for saying it again. And normally I would take more time to interact on it, just the nature of our time and the focus with our guests today. But thank you, Steve, for saying that. Hey, David, we've just got 30 seconds before the break, but are Israelis conscious of the great support that they have from so many evangelical Christians in America? Is that meaningful to Israelis?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I could speak for many Israelis, and I can speak for myself when I say that some of our strongest supporters are Americans and Christians. And
yep.
And all we have to do is look at most of the candidates in the Republican Party.
Hey, we're out. Yeah, so we'll come back and focus on that.
It's fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire with my special guest, David Rubin, author of the book, The Islamic Tsunami, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. Shiloh is the proper Hebrew pronunciation, and he is the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. Let me get one more question, okay? Nathan, if you could get right to your question for David Rubin, please.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am, Nathan.
Okay, sorry, your thing keeps cutting out whenever you say my name. Right, so here's my question. I am a Christian, and I have a somewhat of a biblical understanding of God's covenant that he gave to Abraham about Israel, and that, you know, anyone who stands with Israel will be blessed, and anyone who stands against it will be destroyed.
Yes.
And, like when Jesus came, I don't know if you're a Christian.
All right, Nathan, your question for David, please.
Okay. Do you believe that if Iran gets a nuclear weapon, God would allow them to use it against Israel? That's my question.
All right, thank you.
Okay, well, response, our understand. Yes, should I be answering that?
If you can, sure.
Okay, our understanding of freedom of choice is that we are not absolutely not supposed to be relying on miracles. Thank God we have had many miracles here in Israel, and you know, I could tell you about miracles personally in my own life when my son and I were wounded by Islamic terrorists, and our lives were saved through miracles. The whole return of Israel as an independent nation is a miracle. But we are absolutely, when it comes to matters of life and death, we are not supposed to be relying on miracles. And Israel is not, you know, we live in a very bad neighborhood, so to speak, and that's a very big understatement. And when we have an enemy with 50,000 plus missiles pointed at our main cities, And there is a country that is supporting those terrorist organizations who have those missiles pointed at Israel, and they are working feverishly to attain nuclear capability to attach nuclear warheads to those missiles. We cannot take a chance. On life and death matters, we absolutely cannot take a chance. It's very easy from New Jersey and California and wherever Nathan is calling in from to say that. But we in Israel, a country the size of Delaware, when spoken generously about the size of New Jersey, we cannot afford to take that chance.
Got it. Hey, Nathan, thank you for the question and calling from Phoenix, Arizona, just to give you the location, David. All right.
Okay.
Very, very, very quickly, we've just got about 2 minutes now. The Republican candidates, if you just had to rate the ones that you feel best about, the ones that are still in the race in terms of their stance on Israel, who do you feel best about? Who do you feel worse? Maybe we can have you on another time as we get further into the race and get more of your perspective on this. But just real quick, who do you put at the top of the list? Who do you put at the bottom of the list in terms of current Republican candidates?
Based on what I've heard so far, and what I know about the candidates, what they've said in the past, and their knowledge of the Middle East, I would say Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum, and possibly Mitt Romney, in that order. Gingrich being the most knowledgeable and who has spoken the most common sense about what's happening in the Middle East. Rick Santorum has also made some very strong statements about Israel, very positive statements. And Michelle Bachmann was also very good. I'm actually sorry to see her be dropping out of the race, but I understand.
Got it. All right. Listen, David, we will stay in touch as things unfold and bring the perspective from Israel. And to our listeners, we're normally focused more on the spiritual, biblical side of things. We're looking at it from many different sides and getting a perspective of a committed Jewish man living in Israel. And David, as you know, there are a whole lot of people that listen that are praying for Israel and praying for God's blessing on the nation, as well as his blessing and salvation to come to the entire Middle East. So thank you again for being with us. The book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. Again, keep safe, David. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Great talking with you. All right, friends. I opened the phone lines as wide as I could to those who were supporters of Ron Paul. I went to pro-Paul callers first so as to give opportunity. If you had something you wanted to say, now I've had plenty of calls I didn't get to, but I, as you see, I tried to take ones as I was looking at my call screen that all wanted to differ. You sort these things out, okay? There are many, many different issues to be looking at, but you sort these things out. I will give more kingdom perspective, more biblical perspective on these issues in the coming days. Tomorrow, don't miss the broadcast. I think you are going to be thrilled and blessed. I'm going to give my story, my testimony, my witness, 5 reasons why I know that Jesus Yeshua is our Messiah. I didn't plug that through the show because our guest that's on is not a follower of Jesus, and I did not want to embarrass him or make this into a religious issue while he was on the air. But please join tomorrow and listen. I tell you, you're going to be edified. I assure you, you're going to be edified and encouraged and built up in your faith. The next hour, I'm going to be talking about how we get so caught up in political things and where our perspective needs to be. Some further perspectives I think will be helpful. Remember, you can watch my talk at Family Research Council tomorrow. Live webcast, 12 to 1, speak now or forever hold your peace. Just sent over the PowerPoint notes for the talk. I think you'll be stirred by that. So go to frc.org. And let me talk to you candidly. We've got a wonderful resource. It's a 6-hour teaching I did on It's Time to Rock the Boat, a real wake-up, shake-up series of teachings, practical, eye-opening. It'll stir your heart. We'll stir those that listen. It's only $25, which is real cheap, but it's $12 postage paid this week. So call into order. But can I talk to you candidly? Oh, there's millions of dollars going to candidates, and then the candidates, only one's going to ultimately emerge as the candidate, and then it could be billions of dollars spent in the elections. And then where does it go? Make a gospel investment. Make a gospel investment. Stand with us as we do a frontline work that is touching people all over America and around the world and making a difference. Ask yourself, if our voice was pulled out, would there be a void? Yes, there would, because God's given us a job to do, and by his grace, we are going forward, not backward. Stand with us. Order the resource. It's Time to Rock the Boat. And sow into our work, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time. That's 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, I am not an expert on the policies of Ron Paul, nor am I primarily a political expert. But this much I know. When it comes to biblical prophecy and when it comes to justice, I'm standing with Israel, and I'm praying for salvation to spread to Israel and the Muslim world. Well, the Iowa caucuses are now history, and already I can see the political frenzy rising in the church. How do we keep a right perspective?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. I've got some important things I want to share with you today that could open up a can of worms, but it's fine. We'll open it up with wisdom, and we'll go somewhere with it. Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. I just spent an hour with the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, himself with his three-year-old son, the victims of a terrorist attack years ago. He was weighing in with his concerns about Congressman Ron Paul's views, policies on Israel. And I asked for pro-Paul supporters to call in and interact with him. And it's a conversation we'll keep having. It's Wednesday. Our focus is on the world. And I want to focus in particular on the political scene here in America. And I want to do it in as non-political a way as I can, although I'm going to intersect heavily with politics. And if you agree with me, there's a number to call. And if you disagree with me, it's the same number. In fact, I would almost rather hear from people who differ with me, but I don't want to discourage you from calling if you agree. The number is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. All right. I was following the votes last night in Iowa, and I'm just telling you where my sentiments were, okay? Just my human sentiments. I was really rooting for Rick Santorum, all right? Now, I know it's just the Iowa caucus. It's just the first vote. But sometimes, you ever, maybe those into sports, you don't know who you're rooting for until the game starts, and then you find yourself rooting for one team. It's like, oh, I guess I'm for that team. Well, I definitely am not a supporter of Mr. Romney. Maybe I'm just wrong about him. Maybe I'm wrong about him. I have colleagues that absolutely are against him for a number of reasons. Maybe I'm wrong about him. I don't know Mitt Romney well. All right, but gut level, I was rooting for Rick Santorum. Okay, I have questions about Ron Paul. I've been interacting more with his supporters recently. I've got some questions, but anyway, I was hoping Rick Perry would do better. But anyway, now, because it was so close, it's being decided by 8 votes. So I'm doing other things, writing and then talking to Nancy, doing some stuff. And I've got a couple of websites. I've got townhall.com up. I've got Drudge Report. So I'm looking at the computer, and it's like the most unbelievable thing. It's like some crazy game where the lead changes back and forth and back and forth. And you're almost on the edge of your seat. And then, I went to sleep real late, so by the time I went to sleep, it was like Rick Santorum down by 13, Rick Santorum up by 100, Mitt Romney up by 8. And I thought, wow. I mean, the whole thing's just getting started. And, of course, this was so dramatic and close that obviously it can get you emotionally drawn in more. But as I see these things unfolding, I am quite confident in a negative way. In other words, I'm confident of something negative. I'm quite confident that there's going to be so much massive political turmoil in this coming year, and that Christians are going to get super caught up in this, and that we still may not end up with God's heart, God's mind, or God's ideal will in terms of what would be best. I absolutely oppose the reelection of Barack Obama, just as I opposed his election. And any of you that would dare tell me it's because I'm a racist, please look in the mirror, because if there's racism, it's coming from you, not from me. God knows that. I oppose him strongly for quite a number of reasons. However, I do not have the mentality of anybody but Obama. And maybe the church needs 4 more years of Barack Obama. What? How can... Oh, stay with me. I'll explain myself.
Cleansing flame, send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, AskDrBrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. Okay. I just said something that got some of you either eyebrows raised or upset or maybe agreeing. And what I said was perhaps the church needs 4 more years of President Obama. I said, what? Why would you say that? Let me make myself clear, all right? I wrote an article a few months back, Don't Put Your Trust in a Political Savior. I can do that as much as anyone can. Now, let me first explain when I vote what I base things on. I mean, obviously, the Lord can direct us to vote, speak to us to do a particular thing. But otherwise, there are certain fundamentals for me. Maybe for you, the big issue is always economic because the economy is going to affect every person in the nation. Maybe for you, the big issue is national security. Maybe for you, the big issue is immigration. You may have different issues. I am not judging your criteria. I believe that things that I'm saying are important and everyone needs to factor these in, but I'm not saying these are the only things. But when I vote, there are major questions of importance to me. I am deeply concerned about the issue of the sanctity of life. I believe that ultimately we will be blessed or cursed on a national level. Even taking divine intervention out of it, just the effect on a society based on our stance on the sanctity of life. In other words, we will reap what we sow. And many of the terribly destructive tendencies, characteristics in our nation go back to our views on abortion. So that's the first thing. I want to know, is this candidate truly, solidly, historically pro-life, and if they weren't historically pro-life, did they truly undergo a pro-life conversion so that they truly are pro-life? That's major. You could be the world's greatest economist. You could be brilliant on national security, but if you're pro-abortion, you are not getting my vote. Second thing, and generally the candidates that stand with one of these things will stand with the other, and the third I'm going to mention. Secondly, marriage and family are very important to me. They are fundamentals of society. There are some who say that society should get out of the issue of marriage, that marriage is a church issue, it's a religious issue. No, it's not only that. Plenty of secular people get married. You say, no, but marriage itself is a sacred covenant. Well, that's part of it. It's part of it. The scripture doesn't even address it, though, in that particular way. Marriage is, after being established by God for the entire world, the entire human race, marriage is part of society. And the reason that society conveys benefits on marriage is because marriage conveys benefits on society. Marriage and family are super important to me. Therefore, moral issues are super important to me. Therefore, the issue of pervasive homosexual activism is very important to me. If you want to understand why, just read my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. Read any one chapter out of the book, and you'll say, okay, I understand. That's number two. Number three, Israel. America's relationship to Israel is super important to me. Based on justice, based on what is best for the Middle East, based on God's purposes and God's promises, I see these all going hand in hand. In other words, I don't side with Israel because of biblical prophecy, but if I was acting on justice, I would side against it. No, quite the contrary. Justice, biblical truth contribute together for me to stand with Israel. So those are three things I look at that are very important. Pro-life issues, where does a candidate stand on abortion and the larger issues of sanctity of life? Marriage, family, and then specifically, where does it come out in terms of where they stand with gay activism? I'm all for compassionate treatment of all human beings. I'm all for equal rights for all human beings, and I absolutely oppose the vast majority of the goals of gay activism. And then where does a candidate stand on Israel? Well, I knew if Mr. Obama was going to be true to his history and to communications he had in years past, that he would be the worst president we ever had in these three areas in terms of stance on abortion, stance on homosexuality, and therefore marriage-related issues, despite the fact that he is not divorced himself, that he and his wife and family, that's a wonderful example to have a married couple, first marriage, only marriage together in the White House. That's I applaud that. I celebrate that. And I celebrate the fact that he's the first black president we had. That to me is a massive, important breakthrough. I just wish it had been another black president for the good of the nation and for legacy. So I militantly oppose him on those issues, on sanctity of life issues, on gay activism issues. And as you hear from many in Israel, he's not considered a friend of Israel. Yeah, as an American president, he's far more friendly towards Israel than many other nations are. But for those reasons, I absolutely do not want to see him reelected. I'm not happy with other things that are happening. I'm not happy with handling the economy and so on. But that is ultimately secondary to me. Now, I don't have the viewpoint and the mentality of, well, just anybody but Obama. Because let me tell you what happens. What happens is that we take our foot off the pedal. What happens is that we cease having passion and we cease crying out for revival because we think we have a political solution. Well, if we can just get the right person in place, then everything will be better. Now, let's just say that Rick Santorum was raised up by God for such a time as this. Just throw out the possibility, all right? We've had on the Republican side, And this is absolutely not a Republican versus Democrat issue to me. If you hear me saying that, then you don't know me. If you just tuned in the first time today, that's you can be forgiven. But I absolutely do not identify with a political party. All right. I've voted Republican in a number of recent elections, but I do not identify. It doesn't resonate with me. It's not a badge that I wear. I couldn't imagine wearing a badge of a political candidate personally. Or a candidate I could support, but even to put the bumper stickers on my car, it's just not the way I am, let alone, you know, I'm a Republican or I'm a Democrat. Yikes. I'm not judging you. I can't relate to that. But let's just say that God was raising up Rick Santorum. Let's just say that. And he is so strong on these issues. I mean, you're not going to find someone stronger on the pro-life issue. You're not going to find someone more hated by gay activists than Rick Santorum. And from what we understand, strong support of Israel. Okay, that's all positive. And he's been a senator and so on. But let's just say God was raising him up. Well, the only way that he could really bring about change was if he stuck to his guns. Yes, he has to be the president of the entire nation. He has to be the president of atheists. He has to be the president of Muslims. He has to be the president of gays and straights. He has to be the president of everyone. We understand that he would understand that. Yes, he has to be the president of the pro-abortion people and the pro-life people. Yes. But just as Mr. Obama has aggressively worked for these other causes, which are dead wrong, perhaps if there was a President Santorum, he would work for these causes in the right way and stand for them in the right way. But what normally happens is by the time the political process is finished, those of us who want to see radical change come based on biblical values and principles, not trying to take over the nation and enforce Christianity on the nation, but rather to say that we will make choices and vote based on our biblical values, which we believe are ultimately in the best interest of a nation. Proverbs 14, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So my simple point is this. Let's just say, and again, I'm not making categorical statements. If you are a Romney supporter, if you're a Ron Paul supporter, if you're Rick Santorum supporter, if you're Barack Obama supporter, just listen to the larger points I'm making, okay? If you can do that. Because I know we push some buttons, so sometimes any of us can react or hear more emotionally. But let's just say that Mitt Romney gets elected. And let's just say that he knows how to defeat Mr. Obama, and he knows how to implement some of his viewpoints, and he's going to work on economy, and maybe he'll do better with that with his business background. The big question is it going to bring righteousness? Or will we take our foot off the pedal and say, okay, Barack Obama's out, Mitt Romney's in. He wasn't our first choice, but Mitt Romney's in. or Newt Gingrich or whoever it is, okay? Or Rick Santorum, perhaps, you know, wouldn't pan out a certain way. I don't know. But is it possible that we will do that, as we've done in the past, during the Clinton era? Oh, this is bad, he's immoral, he's pro-abortion, you know, this is bad. And then what happens? We get Mr. Bush in as president, and I'm sure he did some good. I'm sure Bill Clinton did some good as well. Obviously, there are terrible things that happened under the Clinton presidency in terms of a moral image, a moral standard. But did we get this radical national change with President Bush? I'm not attacking him, but did we? But yet, it's like, okay, we got the man in. We don't have to press it. No, we have to press in. Do you hear what I'm saying? We'll be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. I gave an extended little statement. I don't know what else to call it. Poured out my heart about my concerns, which you'll hear a lot from me in these next months, that we get so caught up in the political process. There's going to be plenty of division over supporters of Barack Obama and those who oppose Barack Obama, plenty of division within the church. And I'm sad to say, to a great extent, we'll probably talk past each other. To a great extent, other secondary issues will come up and be raised to primary issues. I have grave concerns that that's going to happen, which is why in the midst of talking about politics, I will do my best to constantly give us a biblical perspective. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884, online, askdrbrown.org. It's quite interesting. A colleague shot me a note the other day saying he had hardly heard of Rick Santorum before yesterday. Suddenly, the rise in Iowa, there was word he was going to make a run. Polls were indicating that. But it's just out of the blue. I mean, I've not followed polling super carefully over the years and all of the primaries and so on. I've looked at them. I've looked at them a little bit more the last few years being on talk radio. But it still hasn't been my major focus. But I don't remember ever seeing anything like this. I mean, one guy up and then out, this one out, then down, then out, then it's kind of crazy to watch. You think anything could happen. And you know, there could be just massive upheaval in the economy. Listen, if gas prices are $5 a gallon and unemployment's 9.5%, it doesn't matter who the president is. That person can be voted out. You know what I'm saying? It's just but. The point that I'm making, though, is this. Oh, I get passionate about these things, but I constantly remind myself that the answer is in Jesus, not in the political candidate. Now, to the extent that somebody will think outside the box and go outside the system. Okay, let me say that again. To the extent that someone is willing to go against the grain and take on the establishment, to that extent, I have hope. To the extent that the person will just play by the establishment. Look, on major issues that I stand for, I have more harmony with the Republican platform in recent years, as long as I've followed these things carefully, than the Democratic platform in terms of the pro-life issues, in terms of homosexual activism, in terms of Israel. Okay? I'm much more at home with the Republican platform on many of these candidates than the Democratic platform. But I understand there's a Republican establishment. You better believe I understand there's a Republican establishment. Just like there is a Democratic establishment, there's a Republican establishment. And I would rather see the possibility of completely going against the establishment and say, okay, this we are standing for this. And if you won't stand with us, fine, we'll lose an election or two, but we'll start a whole new party. That's crazy. That's insane. Well, new parties started. The parties have not always been here that are here currently. That do you get my drift here? Because if we just stay within the realm of doing it the establishment way, without saying the establishment, okay, look, we appreciate the good you've done, but there are things that you stand for. It's a power thing. It's certain values, and we don't stand for that. So you're going to have to stand with us and get behind these values. And then once we're elected, we're going in a certain direction. Otherwise, what are we doing? Well, so to me, it might be better to have a president who, in my judgment, is making disastrously wrong decisions for the nation, to wake up the church to pray and to bring true revival and repentance to the nation, than to just have another shift in the traditional political landscape. I'm throwing these things out for our discussion as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Ann in Huntersville, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi there, Michael. I was just laughing when you started this whole thing, because, I mean, I hate to tell you this, but I'm so on the same page. I just had to call you and just say that. This is the third day of a fast, and I have been praying. You know, and I said, oh, Lord, it'd be so good if we could have someone like Rick Santorum, because he'd be the best man. He's a man of integrity, man of God. He's a family man. He does what he says he's going to do. He's a senator. He's pro-life, pro-Israel, all that stuff. But I heard a quote today on the Christian radio where it says, "We as Christians, we become so subnormal that when you become normal, it seems abnormal, you know." And
that's a famous Leonard Ravenhill quote that the church has been
subnormal
for so long.
Leonard Ravenhill.
When the right. church has been subnormal for so long that when it finally becomes normal, everyone thinks it's abnormal.
Yeah, exactly. And the irony of it is, you, as radical as you say you are, as revolutionary as you say you are just normal. That's what drives me nuts. I mean, it's like I've tried not to become an apologist for living in this politically correct society. The sad thing is, I did feel when Obama was elected that was the beginning of judgment. But as you said, this also could be the way for God to finally get the attention of Christians. And unfortunately, it seems that is only birthed in times when we go through, you know, the trials that we do go through. And I mean, you know, so I shudder. I hate the thought of four more years of Obama, but unfortunately, we are in an American Idol society. We are in a society where, you know, that kind of Obama would have made a great basketball star. You know what I'm saying? But he hasn't run so much as a hot dog stand. He's a man who his worldview is so skewed in so many ways you can't even go into.
Let me just jump in because we have a break. I mean, look. My opposition to Mr. Obama is not political. It's not political at all. It has nothing to do with Democrat, Republican. It has nothing to do with male, female. It has nothing to do with black, white. It has to do with righteousness. That's my reason for profound opposition. But Ann, I just cut in because we got a break here. I'm totally with you on the fact that we pray, we cry out, we fast when we're in crisis, for the most part. And then when things are okay, praise the Lord. And because of that, we never really see the kind of breakthroughs we need to see. Hey, Ann, thanks for weighing in, and may the Lord bless you during your fast. Tomorrow, friends, 12 to 1, tune in live online. Family Research Council, I'll be bringing an important message. Speak now or forever hold your peace. Go to FRC, as in Family Research Council, FRC.org. Click on events. You can sign in to watch. It's free, but you have to register. And get a hold of It's Time to Rock the Boat. If you're resonating with what I'm saying today, get this six-hour course I took that'll shake you, wake you, stir you. It's just $12 postage paid on a CD for your computer or MP3 player. So we cut the price over 50% to get it to you. Call or order 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978.
It's
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I am on a passionate roll today. Spent an hour with a guest from Israel talking about Ron Paul and his Israel policies. And this guest from Israel had some grave concerns. We took calls from people that differed. And I've spent the last half hour talking about the fact that I am not one of these anybody but Obama guys. Who you're voting for? Anybody but Obama. On righteousness issues, this has zero to do with politics to me. This has zero to do, when I say zero to do with politics, I mean it's not Democrat, Republican, or just playing some political game. On righteousness issues, I have always opposed the candidacy and our presidency of Mr. Obama, who is our president, for whom I pray. I have opposed him and said from the start he would be the most pro-abortion president we've ever had. He would be the most gay activist president we'd ever have. And sadly, he has not been a good friend of Israel. Just ask the Israelis about that. However, it could well be that if we think, well, the solution is just get a Republican in. No. If it's not the right person, a person that's really going to stand for righteousness, a person that on some level is going to buck the system to do what's right, all we'll do is the church is kind of take our foot off the pedal. And lose the sense of urgency and go back to just, okay, well, good. If the economy's better, come on. If the economy was in better shape, most Americans, even Christians, would not be so concerned about the righteousness issues. What an indictment. So as we talk about politics, oh, yeah, I was thrilled to see where Rick Santorum came out last night, and perhaps with him, I mean, being so much out of the blue coming into this role, I mean, it could just be here today, gone tomorrow, or it could be some trend that takes up. Maybe somebody like him can go against the grain. I know a lot of Ron Paul supporters support him because he's so out of the box. Well, yeah, be out of the box and challenge the establishment, but do it for the purposes of righteousness, what's in the best interest of the nation and the world. And yeah, I'm for that. But to just passionately say we've just got to get over for the church, please hear me, for the church, that we might need 4 more years of Mr. Obama. And I want to say this again, 866-34-TRUTH to weigh in. I'll get to the calls in a moment. 866-348-7884 online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. I want to make this statement as clearly as I can. Because to my shock, this started coming up some years ago when I first took issue with some of Mr. Obama's policies when he was just in the primaries. If you say to me, well, that's race, or you don't want a black man in the White House, I'm sad to say, look in the mirror, because that's where the racism is coming from. Because it's not coming from me. Oh, just because you got a racist friend that thinks that way, don't project that on me. I mean, I don't need to tell you that God knows in my heart. I don't need to tell you that one of my closest friends in the world is an Indian from India. Well, he's not black. Oh. He's dark-skinned. That one of my dear ministry soulmates is a black pastor, and he jokes, you know, same mother, different father, because our hearts are so united on so many issues. That my first organ teacher when I was 5.5 years old was an openly gay man, by the way, a white gay man. And he and his partner would come over to our house for lessons for my sister and me, and then would stay for dinner and hang out. That was my first organ teacher. My second organ teacher was a black man married to a white woman. So this is, the early 60s, shunned by many people because of the racist views in our society. But not in my family. He and his wife would come and were welcome guests. I've lived my life where racism has never been an issue. It was never an issue in my family. It's never an issue in my own life. However, my passionate opposition to Mr. Obama's presidency, which is based on righteousness issues, stance on Israel. I don't know that maybe we don't need 4 more years, because otherwise the church goes right back to sleep. We'll talk about it.
The world. Give us
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, I address political issues, and I write about political issues, but I am not a political analyst or a political commentator. I am a gospel-based thinker. When I teach at seminary and Bible college and ministry training schools. Most of the time I spend is pouring into people, being raised up and sent out to do the work of ministry. I'm on the air with you 10 hours a week talking about what the Bible says about different subjects, talking about reaching Jewish people with the gospel. Oh, tomorrow, don't miss tomorrow's broadcast. I think you'll be deeply blessed. As I share, and in some detail, some things I have hardly ever shared publicly before, in some detail, my witness as to why I know, why I'm sure that Jesus, Yeshua, is our Messiah, the Messiah of Israel, and the Savior of the world. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I am weighing in on my views that we can so quickly put our trust in a political leader, in a political process, that we lose track of the greater issues, which is America's solution will not be found in a political leader unless that political leader points us clearly back to God's ways and God's truths, and we get on our faces and repent and cry out. And as the people of God, as the church, we often sin. It is sin. We often blow it because if we get, for many white evangelicals, if we get a Republican candidate in who's mildly conservative, okay, we don't have to pray so much. We're missing the whole point. All right, to the phones. Levon in King, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. Just a scenario for you right quick. In discussion with a friend the other day, we were coming up with this, and it's about Mitt Romney, basically. With Mr. Romney being a Mormon, and of course, you know, to revert back a little bit, you know, the Christian Coalition or Mormon Majority or whatever, when Jerry Falwell was living, and then also when Pat Robertson at one time was kind of leading that, and it was kind of a voice to be reckoned with. But now we really didn't seem to have that. We've kind of faded into the background, it seems. And so now you have Mr. Romney, who there's a possibility, it's not here yet, but the possibility he could get the nomination for the Republican Party. And we were discussing and come to the conclusion that if he gets that, it's going to put Christians in a pretty big pickle because, number one, we don't want to vote for Obama, but then again, do we really want to vote for somebody that is a member of a cult? And my prediction was if that happens and Mr. Romney gets the nomination, you're going to see Christians by the droves just stay home and probably not go to the polls because who do you vote for?
Yeah, the other thing, you know, the Mormonism is an issue to some. To me, that's secondary to other issues because we've had people professing to be Christians that it didn't play out in their own lives. But because he does not, that will be a factor for some. So you're absolutely right. And then for others, he has not ignited the passion of a strongly conservative moral base for whatever the reason. And because of that, people might not vote. On the other hand, I think the passion to see Mr. Obama out drives others enough that they'll vote. But good points. And again, we are going to have so much focus and there's going to be so much money spent on these issues, whereas we need to have these as important issues, but secondary or a distant second to seeking God and preaching the gospel and living holy and making disciples and ministering to hurting people and making a difference. Put that first. Put the energy, the passion, the finances. Put that first. Here, let me. I'm going to go back to the phones, but allow me to say this for a moment. I was thinking of candidates that were running that got tons of money, millions and millions and millions of dollars for their campaign, and they're out now. I don't mean they never should have run. I don't mean that they were wrong or unethical in taking money. I don't mean that they weren't sincere. But I look at that and I think, for what? And then, because Mr. Obama will certainly have a lot of money. If Romney runs, he'll have a lot of money. You could end up with, you know, billion-plus dollars in advertising, campaigning, and back and forth. And the more you spend, if I'm opposing you, the more I have to spend. It goes back and forth. I'm thinking, what if we put that money into gospel work? What You know, can I tell you what we would do if that a fraction of that money came to us with our missionaries around the world, with the projects that would be taking place, ministering to poor, hurting people around the world? Can I tell you the new stations that we'd go on to and the expanded work that we would do and the increased outreach to Jewish people and training to reach Jewish people? Can I tell you where the money would go? And yet, money just gets poured into these political causes. Fine, give your money, but primarily pour into gospel work, primarily pour into meeting the needs of other people. And I know it's a lot of people giving little amounts of money to these political campaigns and then some big donors, but hey, a lot of money, a lot of people giving little amounts of money to ministries, and a lot of people who have large amounts of money sowing it in make a massive difference. You say, are you telling us to send you money rather than political candidate? Of course, because we'll put it into souls and eternity. And you sow it into your local church, you sow it into other ministries, and that'll make a massive difference. It's not a fundraising, so I'm just telling you, I look at all this money, I think, come on, where does it end up? For what? All right, back to the phones. Charles in Atlanta, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. I would like to just put my opinion in on, like, politicians that deceive their way into office, and I believe that's what President Obama did. He made all kinds of promises, you know, that were just totally unrealistic, and he spoke in grandiose terms, and it turns out that, you know, his policies totally contradict these promises. And the thing is, the promises he made were vague in nature, and which he could make them mean anything he wanted them to mean, you know, like hope and change, fundamentally change America. No one knew that what he was talking about was socialism at the time. They thought he was talking about cleaning up corruption or something. And
yeah, but you got to admit, though, just about every candidate is going to come up with some kind of a mantra. They're going to come up with some kind of change, sweeping slogan. And basically, here's the deal. And I'm not differing about the grandiose claims. I think that there were grandiose expectations and he was exalted in a certain way. But here's the bottom line. The politicians are going to use their rhetoric, right? And then what you need to do is find out who they really are. What's their track record? Because that's who they're going to continue to be. And whatever the rhetoric is, that's how they're going to implement it. So in other words, Barack Obama was really true to his original colors. That the people who said he'd be radical, the people who had these issues about his various policies, that's who he's been. And yes, of course, the masses go for the soundbite. Hope and change. That's a great slogan. He came up with it first. Otherwise, it would have been somebody else's slogan. So we got to realize, let's get past the soundbites, right? Let's get past the hype. And let's ask, okay, who is this person really? Who is Mitt Romney? Who is Barack Obama? Who is Hillary Clinton? Who is Rick Santorum? Who have they been? Where do they stand, and not get caught up in the frenzy of the person or the personality? Hey, Charles, thanks for weighing in. I appreciate it. Steve in St. Petersburg, Florida, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine, thanks.
I have a different take on Barack Obama. Basically, I'm probably, you know, when I look at, you know, the last election when, I don't know if you recall, when Rick Warren did the interview with both of them and John McCain, who made it very, pretty clear, you know, you could tell by the way he said, you know, religion's a personal thing and so on. And Barack Obama made it pretty clear. He said, Jesus Christ is my Redeemer, my Savior. And as you know, most Christians probably voted for John McCain, whose wife, I don't know if I'm positive on this, heads one of the biggest beer distributors. I'm just saying, if Christian people vote on moral issues, I mean, on some of the character issues, do we actually look? Should we get rid of Las Vegas? Should we get rid of lottery tickets? Should we bring back prohibition? In other words, Barack Obama is a great family man. He's personally not for abortion or gay marriage. But on the other hand,
Steve. I 100% dispute that he is not. When you say he's not for gay marriage, when he says his views are evolving, I read what he wrote before. I have consistently said I'm thrilled to see a married man, first marriage, in the White House raising kids. I think that's a great moral example. I've consistently said that. I said, I'm thrilled to see a black man in the White House, although I'm not thrilled that it was him for legacy purposes and other reasons. But he has been the most radical gay activist president in our history. In 2009, the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, he brought 300 gay activists to the White House and said, this is your house. And he made clear that the goals you are fighting for, we are going to implement. This is completely outrageous. He led the way and stood up for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell in the military, and goes further, has his people step back from standing with Defense of Marriage Act, which is law. Just decided we're not going to defend this law. So to me, that's just empty rhetoric. The marriage statements to me are empty rhetoric. I'll come back with a quote on the other side of the break. Stay with me.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. I want to emphasize again that the reason I am pressing these points and pushing certain buttons about political issues is to remind us that the biggest issue is not politics. The biggest issue is gospel. The biggest issue is God's kingdom. No, we are not trying to establish a theocratic kingdom here in America. We are not trying to take over the nation
and enforce Bible-based Christianity on everybody. And you got to go to church on Sunday or you go to jail.
No, come on. If that's what you're hearing, then it's in your own head. It's not coming from me. But I do not care. If the president of the United States was a member of my local congregation and a big supporter of my ministry, and he got up and did outrageous things, I would stand against his position. So when I'm told that Mr. Obama, our president, is against gay marriage, that's nonsense. That is nonsense. His official view is his views are, quote, evolving. But when he is the keynote speaker at the Human Rights Campaign, the world's largest gay activist organization with a $45 million budget, much of it spent on political issues. When he speaks as the keynote guest at the annual fundraising event of the Human Rights Campaign in Washington, D.C. this year, as he did last year, and says that the America he wants to see is the America where a man, a father, says to his lesbian daughter, I don't just love you, but I love your wife, his daughter's wife. That's a person that supports gay marriage. Period. Just accept it. Come on. How far do things have to go? I mean, I told folks years ago, before he was elected president, this is where he stands. I read the stuff. Okay? You can say, well, I don't care about that. I think he's good for this. That. Fine, but at least acknowledge the reality. Acknowledge the reality. I have no problem with people saying, well, you support this when they have these issues. I'm the one that brings up the issue. I wrote an article about Newt Gingrich, whom I like and admire in many ways and then have some profound reservations about in other ways. I wrote an article, will his past moral failures sink him and hurt his campaign? The fact that he's been divorced and now remarried for the third time, and that there was an adulterous affair in two of the cases, as we understand it. There's some exaggerated reports come out as well. I raise these issues. I'm not afraid to say there's some issue. I raise the issue. That isn't it striking that out of our Republican pro-family candidates last election, they're divorced, whereas the pro-abortion, pro-gay activist candidates for the Democrats were not divorced? I raise these issues. I do not identify. Look, I do not identify with a political party. You got to hear me. My heart burns to see the church awakened and the people of God turning to God with passion, with fervor, with fire, and crying out for revival, starting with you and me. I have done this. there was a question asked an old evangelist years ago, how do you pray for revival? And he said, draw a circle on the ground. Draw a circle on the ground. Then step inside the circle and say, God, revive everything inside this circle. You know what I've done at times? At my house, in my study, there is a chair, nice, comfortable chair I can sit in and read. And there's a little rug next to it because it's wood floor. There's a little rug next to it. And you know what I've done? I have stood on that little rug and cried out to God and said, God, revive everything on this rug. First and foremost, the work has to begin afresh in you and me. And to the extent God is working, because he is working in many different places, many different settings, to the extent he is, we have to take hold of it. We have to move forward. We have to recognize that the Holy Spirit has been given and we have the word of God and Jesus is Lord and we have to stand up and do what is right. But we have to be repenting of our own sins, of our own failures, of the junk in our own midst, and then crying out for the church nationally. And then as we are awakened, it will affect the whole nation. Oh, I would love to see. I don't know that it's the right person, but just based on the little that I know about Mr. Santorum, I'd love to see Rick Santorum as president of the United States. That whether he'd be a good president or not, I don't know. Whether he's God's choice or not, I don't know. I'm just talking as me. I'd love to see him as president because three things that are super important to me are the president. I know economy is important. I know national security is important. I know other things are important. But to me, I'm looking at sanctity of life, massively important to me. I'm looking at sanctity of life, and we've got him standing absolutely strongly pro-life to the core historically, as I understand him. Marriage and family are big, big, big to me. And let me tell you something. Gay activists oppose Rick Santorum and mock him more mercilessly than they go after me. Far and away, they've gone after him with intensity for years. That tells you something about his recognition of these moral issues. And from what I understand of his statement, strong friend of Israel. Those are the three biggest things I look at when I vote. And if someone violated those three principles and yet was brilliant economically and was brilliant with foreign strategy, you know, national and international issues, I couldn't vote for them. Couldn't vote for them. So I'd love to see that happen. Again, I don't know if he's God's choice. I don't know if he'd be a good president. I'm just talking right now, January 4th of 2012. That being said, I am not putting my trust in a man. I'm not putting my trust in a political system. I understand there's a Republican establishment, a Democratic establishment, political establishment. Often the things get so bogged down there, by the time it comes through, we do not have real change. Where's real change going to come from? Yep, politics plays a part, but real change is going to come from the people of God awakening and taking hold of the purposes of God and not letting go. Get hold of my resource. Trust me, it'll stir you and minister to you. It's a six-hour class I did on It's Time to Rock the Boat, real wake-up, shake-up, stir-your-heart kind of message that I think you'll be moved as you hear it, challenged and moved. It's only $25, which is very inexpensive. This week, $12 for the entire course on your CD, on a CD with MP3 for your computer or MP3 player, $12 and postage paid. 1-800-278-9978. You are not going to get animated phone calls from us, okay? Some, you know, robot phone calls soliciting your funds. Support the Line of Fire today. No. I'm saying get this resource. It'll impact you, change your life, and stand with us. Instead of sowing all your money into these political campaigns, sow it into us, and we'll go make a difference. We'll go change the world together. How's that for a deal? 1-800-278-9978. Let the phones ring off the hook today. 1-800-278-9978. I'll say it again. Together we are making a difference. My bottom line today, 2012 is certainly going to be a year of political division and of great divisiveness throughout our nation. Let us, God's people, rise above it and take hold of the purposes of God and be determined to see Jesus glorified in us and in our world.